You are listening to a free version of the Majority Report with Sam Steeter. To support the show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeter.
It is Wednesday, May 31st, 2017. My name is Michael Brooks. This is the four-time award-winning Majority Report. We're broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On today's program, independent journalist Corey Pine. He was not only in Portland covering this act of right-wing terrorism that cost two lives last week, he also spoke to Jeremy Christensen, the man that committed that act, at a pro-free speech rally just several weeks ago. We'll talk about that tragedy, the rise of right-wing terrorism, how it intersects with the Trump White House, the rise of white nationalism, and of course, the exchange of free ideas. Speaking of which, Dave Rubin, where are you? Where is the guest invite for Jeremy Christensen? I'm sure after he's arranged, maybe you could figure something out. Donald Trump is going to pull us out of the Paris Accords, even as apparently he is telling other heads of state to call him on his cell phone. Pass the niceties. Just give me a ring, Macron, Merkel. But most especially, please, King Salman. That would be a much more fun cell phone conversation for him, if they could find a common language. And civilian casualties increase in Syria and Iraq as the U.S. amps up its air campaign there. James Mattis, Mad Dog Mattis, gives the lowest common denominator in America, our right wing, a bad Steven Seagal movie moment on TV, and they respond exactly the way you'd expect them to. Iran deal underminers in Washington, D.C. think that they have found a new dastardly scheme that the Iranians are cooking up and a new reason to undermine the deal. Turns out they're just mistranslating something from Farsi. They're totally wrong. But more debunking as that deal continues to work. And activists investigating Ivanka Trump's shoe factory in China are detained or missing. I'm guessing this could lead to an even tightening and deepening of U.S.-Chinese relations in the Trump era. And a mercenary firm hired by the Dakota Access Pipeline employed counterinsurgency techniques to target protesters, even as that pipeline has been constructed and continues to spring leaks. All that and more on today's Majority Report. One of the things that's been interesting to note in this Trump era is that many, many people have started using phrases like many, many people. But the way in which people like myself, who are not necessarily, I would consider myself a patriot. I care about this country and its future. I care about the globe and its future. And I, you know, stand up during a baseball game, listen to the national anthem, pay my respect. But obviously, many political uses of patriotism are, you know, it's a refuge of, it's not the last refuge of scoundrels, it's the first and last refuge of scoundrels. And, you know, a lot of the kind of optics of things like NATO meetings or, you know, everything else, if you have my kind of politics, you look at it with a tremendous amount of cynicism because, you know, you are usually talking about political leaders that have gladly sent young people and troops to their deaths and serious injuries and reckless and stupid wars. You're talking about, you know, diplomatic niceties and other kind of patriotic nods of the head that really are just covers for U.S. empire building, global violations of human rights, and just sort of a sanctimonious puffery, which is an embarrassing insult to everybody involved in it. But under Donald Trump, there has been this way in which even people like myself and even people, you know, like Jeremy Scahill, who has built a living as a fierce and smart and sharp critic of every manner of U.S. misdeeds in the world, we're just like, wait a second, he did what at the NATO summit? That is embarrassing. We have found this whole other area of stagecraft and things that people like me, frankly, just didn't think about much before as whole new arenas to be humiliated in. I mean, it was somewhat embarrassing under George W. It was embarrassing under George W. Bush, but this is a whole other level. And even the fact that I say somewhat embarrassing speaks volumes. So here is Donald Trump. He was at a cemetery, Arlington National Cemetery, where I would like the real version first. This is Donald Trump. Actually, you know what? Do you have Sassy up first? We can do. So he was at Arlington National Cemetery. He's next to General Mattis. And again, this is a place of respect, of a certain degree of decorum. Whatever you think of our wars and our foreign policy, people are dead and lying here. It's a place to just observe some basic situational awareness, which is all one could ask of Trump. Well, actually, you really can't ask that much, but forget leadership. We have the sassy Trump version first of him singing the national anthem. And usually what we do is we play the real version and then we say, now we'll get to the essence with the sassy Trump. The sassy Trump is brilliant, but this is a case where the real version... This is a case where the real version is even more bizarre. So we'll play the real version second, but the sassy Trump version first. Here he is at Arlington National Cemetery singing the national anthem. Sassy Trump version first, real version coming up second.
Ladies and gentlemen, please join the United States Air Force Band in singing our national anthem.
Bursting in air, gave pro through the night that our flag was still there. Oh, say, does that star-spangled banner yet wave?
Okay, so I think there's no doubt that everybody in this studio, even after significantly pre-gaming before a sporting event, has shown more respect at the basic singing of the national anthem before a baseball team plays, let alone at Arlington National Cemetery. Now, we're going to just play a sped-up version of the real version because, and some of, I will say this is pretty visual, so you have to realize that he's rocking back and forth
next to Mattis.
And Mattis has the square jawed, like, that's right, I'm here at Arlington, and tomorrow I'm here to wipe out your fucking family. He's got that kind of face. And Trump is bouncing back and forth. He's beating his hand on his heart and just looking disrespectful and bizarre. And we'll speed it up here, though, because there's kind of a crescendo where he's actually lip syncing. Yes. Okay.
I'm going to sing the bombs bursting part because I want to send a message to Mattis that I want more of that stuff because I like that stuff.
It's subconscious. It's like, hey, can we blow up more mountains in Afghanistan or something? Like, whatever happened to the bombs? He reveals every day the way in which there's stuff that I just never even occurred to me. Like, yeah, when you're at Arlington and you're the president, you look somber.
The funny thing to me is how ABC posted that video, and they titled it on YouTube, President Trump Sings the National Anthem Before Giving a Speech. Like, as if he was scheduled on the program to give this.
Like, no, I would like to
sing. I got this.
I would like to sing it. I think I got it today. It's going to be great. And I think at this point we could safely say that if you pretty much randomly selected people from almost anywhere in the country, they might perform a better job as president than this guy. In fact, I'm sure that hiring for your small business, you've probably taken that job far more seriously than we did in somehow electing this guy to the White House. Which brings me to my question, are you hiring? But do you know where to find the best candidates? Finding great talent can be tough. No kidding, 2016 presidential election. Thankfully, with ZipRecruiter, you can post your job up to 100-plus job sites with just one click. Then their powerful technology efficiently matches the right people to your job better than anyone else. That's why ZipRecruiter is different. Unlike other job sites, ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on your candidate finding you. It finds them. In fact, over 80% of jobs posted on ZipRecruiter get a qualified candidate in just 24 hours. No juggling emails or calls to your office. Simply screen, rate, and manage all candidates in one place with ZipRecruiter's easy-to-use dashboard. Find out today why ZipRecruiter has been used by businesses of all sizes to find the most qualified job candidates with immediate results. And right now, my listeners can post a job on ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/majority. That's ZipRecruiter.com/majority. And one more time, for free today. Try it. ZipRecruiter.com/majority. We will be right back with Corey Pine on the Majority Report. Back to the Majority Report. I'm Michael Brooks. Joining us now is Corey Pine. He's an independent journalist based in Portland, Oregon. He's also host of the News From Nowhere podcast. Corey, how are you?
Been better, Mike, but it's always good to talk to you.
Always good to speak with you, Corey. And the reason you say it's been better is really because of, you know, this crisis that's been sort of dominating, in many ways, national news, but hits close to home for you, not only as a journalist and a resident of Portland, but as someone, and I'll just quote your words now in a recent piece you wrote, "I shook an alleged killer's filthy hand 28 days ago. Mine feels tainted, though, as though I somehow sanctioned his reported act, though I was trying to get some information out of him. He had just marched through Montville Park chanting nigger and throwing fascist salutes wearing an American Revolutionary flag like a cape. Of course, you're talking about this guy, Joseph Christensen, Jeremy Joseph Christensen, who is alleged to have murdered two men who intervened as he was berating a Muslim woman last week in Portland. Corey, talk about meeting this guy and bring us up to date on this story.
You know, one of the hardest things is figuring out where to start this story. Yeah. I mean, do we start it with the history of the Oregon Territory as a whites-only territory? Mm-hmm. Do we start it with the Civil War? Do we start it with the Native American genocide? Do we start it with the skinhead movement in the 80s when Portland was the capital of Skinhead City? Or in the 1920s when the Klan was very active up here in the Northwest? Or a month ago when I met this guy at a rally? There were a lot of other journalists there, but I managed to catch up with him sort of separately. And, you know, let me set the scene a bit. I mean, some of your listeners might remember last month there was a parade canceled, like a community parade canceled in Portland. Mm-hmm. And the news that made it out, the Fox spin even made it in its way to the Atlantic, was that it was canceled because of threats of violence from the left. And the story that got out, which was not totally accurate, was that some protest groups had threatened to assault a Republican Party contingent in the parade. Mm-hmm. That's not exactly what happened. There was a single email threat sent to the parade organizers that said, we will remove known white supremacists from the GOP group in the parade. Mm-hmm. All the protest groups that were named in the email disavowed it, so it's not certain who said it. Anyway, the parade organizers freaked out and canceled it. That led a sort of pro-Trump free speech, you know, Pepe-affiliated movement across the river in Vancouver, Washington, to say that they would stage a free speech rally in place of the canceled parade.
Right.
Now, because there's a very active, you know, anti-Trump and Antifa movement here, some of the Antifa groups said, we're going to come protest that free speech rally. So it looked to be like it was going to be the scene of another confrontation. It was a bit of a clown show, as you might expect if you've seen coverage of any of these things. This right. was back on April 29th, I think. But one guy that stood out was Jeremy Christian. He showed up and, as you sort of described from my account of the events, you know, started throwing Zeke Hale salutes and shouting racial slurs, which immediately caused the, you know, the masked up Antifa kids to sort of swarm him. Mm-hmm. Police kind of kept the group separate. And then I kind of hung around where he was as the police were like searching his backpack for weapons. They seemed to know exactly who he was. It turned out that he had made threats on Facebook prior to the event that he would be. You know, the Oregon was an open carry state, and if any police attempted to disarm, they, you know, you should shoot to kill. Mm-hmm. Pretty striking threat.
Yeah.
Anyway, the march sort of went on, and I was hanging around trying to interview people, and I kind of fell behind the main event, and then I wound up spotting this guy by the side of the road with another guy who wouldn't give me his name. He was kind of in biker gear. And I talked to them for a while. You know, he gave me the line about...
This is Christian. This is Christian.
Christian, yeah. Christian, okay. And this other guy. So he right. did not show up alone. And he pointed out on Facebook as well. I should say that the organizers of this free speech rally have disavowed him. Mm-hmm. But he posted on their event page 70 times, mostly before the event. People pointed out, hey, you've got this guy spouting Hitler nonsense. Does anyone want to disavow it? The only comment... was I won't. That wasn't from an organizer, but they never weighed in. So you've got to consider that when you regard those disavowals. Anyway, I talked to him for a while. I actually got pretty creeped out. He didn't say much useful. He said, you know, it's about free speech. I noticed he had these rune tattoos, which sort of play into his ideology, which we can discuss, which is pretty clear from his Facebook page. Some sort of experts in these white supremacist underworld have identified him as an Odinist, mm-hmm. Which is kind of a pseudo-pagan gobbledygook
right.
that justifies a lot of Aryan race theory nonsense. But you probably have some questions. At
yeah,
this point.
No, that's good to situate us, Corey, because I think those are kind of there's sort of three lanes that I want to go in. I mean, one is the story of what this guy did and figuring him out a bit, which you can elaborate on. Then I think it's useful, and when some people kind of contacted me about talking about this story, and one of the things that people mentioned was that, you know, Portland, as you were alluding to, has a lot of other things going on and a much broader history than its sort of nice kind of liberal organic food reputation. And then number three, you know, taking it out more broadly, how does this stuff fit? I mean, I immediately went on Twitter and said, you know, hey, when is Dave Rubin going to have this guy in his show? There's this sort of like, you know, cult of free speech nonsense, which, you know, we mock not because we actually oppose free speech, but because we know what these sort of pseudo-intellectual, soft alt-right people are actually promoting and what it's actually a stand-in for. And then there's the, you know, the bigger question of the rise of white nationalism, overt racism, and how it interplays with Trump and really the whole modern Republican Party, going back to the 1990s when a number of the kind of Gingrich Republicans made approving statements and nods to the militia movement of the 1990s and even people who kind of overlapped with Timothy McVeigh's terrorism. So this stuff has deep roots. But starting more, I guess, at the narrow, you met this guy. He was spouting nonsense, known to police, not disavowed by these event organizers, you know,
until he murdered, cameras were around.
Until the cameras were around. Can you get, I guess, talk specifically about the incident and the murder? And then I guess you said his ideology is clear. Every time that I've kind of engaged on this at all, there's been this response that, oh, he was a Bernie Sanders supporter. That's been a big kind of talking point to sort of move him away from the, you know, racist and Islamophobic regions that he properly travels in. And then also that, you know, along with that, and obviously in order to murder two people, you know, of course there's a mental illness, obviously, but there is ideology here. But people always try to go to either, you know, confuse the ideology or turn it into a conversation that's vague and amorphous about, well, you know, this is just a crazy guy. Not, yes, maybe a crazy guy, but also a guy that was motivated by a very clear ideology. So I guess explain the incident and what is this guy's actual ideology? I'm assuming he's not a Bernie-crat.
Well, let me hit as many of those things as I can at once. I mean, he showed up to his arraignment shouting, death to Antifa, death to the enemies of America.
Yeah, we have free, sound of that.
Free,
yeah.
Free speech or die. One of the only people that showed up to support him showed up in skinhead gear and then was driven away from the courthouse by supporters of one of the victims. He did on his Facebook page express support for Bernie Sanders and Jill Stein. I think the best interpretation I saw of that was from one of the weird Twitter accounts that said, this is a troll designed to divide the left. And I think it fits completely with the MO of white supremacist organizing. I think that's the most reasonable interpretation. His expressed admiration for the Oslo murderer, Anders Breivik, predates his admiration for Bernie Sanders. Right. His persistent posting of anti-Semitic and racist memes predates his admiration for Bernie Sanders, which was always framed in the context of hating and wanting to murder Hillary Clinton.
Right.
It's really, you know, the origin of his of the Bernie stuff is clowns like and liars like Mike Cernovich. And unfortunately, some Hillary Clinton diehards have decided to run with it for their own reasons. Incredibly cynical.
Right.
You can go look at his Facebook postings himself. Here's a few quotes that I think are perhaps more relevant than his Bernie Sanders posts, which these are post-dated, more closer to the killing. I think this one's from January. He said, if Trump is the next Hitler, then I am joining his SS. He said, brown shirts are rank and file. Nihilist criminals like me facilitate and run the show if we're talking about recreating the Third Reich.
Right.
You need You need unhindered and unhinged thugs for dirty work. Now, does that sound like a Bernie Sanders supporter that you've ever spoken to? Right. That sounds like a white supremacist who's ready to take the fall to instigate a race war or some other crackpot agenda.
You know, Corey, that's exactly right. And I just want to go back to, and then we'll get to the incident, but I just want to, you mentioned it. We do have sound of him at his arraignment. And yeah, this doesn't end. And I'll add too, as someone who's been a pretty sharp critic of Jill Stein, it certainly doesn't sound like a Jill Stein supporter either. This is him.
3-9 from the Metropolitan.
Free speech or die, Portland. You got no safe place. This is America. Get out if you don't like free speech.
954039 from the Metropolitan Public Defender. 92464-7, also from the Public Defender's Office. We're appointed by OPDS to represent this defendant. At this time, I'll tell you that we can acknowledge receipt of the 9-count information in this case filed by the District Attorney's Office. Mr. Christian's name is spelled correctly in the upper left-hand corner. He's going to waive reading and advice of rights, but reserve the right to move against this charge against him for any reason in the future. He'd also like to maintain his right to a speedy trial in this particular case.
Okay, all right.
Next court begins June 7th at 9:30 back here in JC3, and the case is especially assigned to Judge Albright.
Thank you.
One more time. He's about to go again.
Death to the enemies of America. Leave this country if you hate our freedom. Death to Antifa.
And I think, yeah, I mean, Bernie couldn't have said it better himself. What now, Corey, explain the incident, and maybe if you can briefly, because I just want to honor the two men that were murdered. You know, we have this kind of, we're talking about this sociopath for a reason, but it's good to note the people who actually did get murdered doing a very civic and heroic thing.
Yeah, most of the people involved in the incident are public at this point. The exception would be the young woman wearing a headscarf that was initially targeted. Her friend, Destiny Magnum, a young black woman, has been on TV talking about her gratitude for the two men who died. Rick Best, who was 53, he was a City of Portland employee and a 23-year-old Army veteran. I think I also read that he was a Republican.
Yeah.
And Taliesin Myrdan Namkai Mesh, 23-year-old, recent graduate of Reed College here in Portland, also died. The survivor, Micah Fletcher, was 21, Portland State University sophomore and a poet, and pretty committed to racial justice himself. And he is a tough dude. He was in the front row at that arraignment with big scar down his neck just a few days after getting, getting his throat sliced open and you know, like a really close to artery that would have killed him. So, they all deserve gratitude. They have the city's gratitude. The memorials have been really striking. So, absolutely. They deserve to be honored for a moment.
All right. So let's then get into the kind of two, bigger worlds that this guy fits into. You're somebody who's chronicled, many variations of the alt-right from the sort of evil kind of Peter Thiel fantasies of Silicon Valley and the sort of bizarre kind of neo-fascist pseudo-intellectualism that defines that. And then you've also gone and, hung out with the dregs like this guy. When you note and see this kind of use of this very specific language of it, he's talking about this isn't a safe space, free speech. Can you talk more about the kind of utter corruption of these concepts and how they fit into this sort of the postmodern version of bigotry, racism, and backlash?
I think that's a really good way to frame it. I mean, what we're seeing here is fascism adapting for the 21st century, and now it's co-opting a certain strain of liberal discourse about, free speech absolutism, free speech formalism, and using it, abusing it for its own really twisted goals in a way that's going to eliminate free speech for everybody.
Right.
I would say that the organizers of the free speech rally that I met Christian at, he whatever the truth of their disavowal, I mean, he was there. They created an environment for him to shout racial slurs and throw Nazi salutes. And there were certainly a lot of other people there with, anti-Semitic slogans and things like that. He was not the only one. Before I lose my train of thought here, I've been a journalist my entire adult life. I worked in countries with formal state censorship. I get really tired of being lectured about free speech by people who only want to use it to spread racial hatred.
Right.
I mean, it's just outrageous that that we allow this to happen. I mean, my whole career has been based on free speech. I'm just it gives me an aneurysm when I hear about how we've got to protect the free speech of racists. And, yes, our Constitution provides for that, but we don't have to platform it. And this whole debate about no platforming and blah, blah, it's really about to what extent do we roll out the carpet for these people?
Exactly.
You know, do we give them columns? Do we pay them to give speeches on college campuses so they can recruit more
speech
Nazis?
Speech is not platform. All of these morons could stand out in front of Penn Station and frankly, like, the guy that I run in front of, in Penn Station, who's like drinking and telling me that he's like used to be like some type of, royalty, makes more sense, is more interesting to listen to than these people. Free speech is not a guaranteed right to platform. And that's a really important distinction. And as you say, I mean, you're taking concepts that actually should be, defended with some rigor and actually do kind of matter to some extent, and you're completely bastardizing them and turning them into just this sort of like pathetic game of either defending the racists or fascists or, just some, idiot college professors who, really want to teach soft eugenics or really hate that they might get questioned in a classroom. And now all of a sudden they have a platform to go, whine on some pseudo-intellectual YouTube channel or on Fox News. This has nothing to do with, guaranteeing that journalists can publish whatever they need to publish about corporations. It has nothing to do with, guaranteeing an actual open exchange of ideas, which like we can't even say anymore without rolling our eyes because it's been bastardized by some of the most stupid and cynical people in this country.
Well, let's talk about this free speech rally for another minute. Yeah. The organizers of this event are not all who they say they are. First of all, one of the members of this crew, and I'll get into their activities outside of this event in a minute.
Yeah.
At another event where they showed up to protest some left-wing college students who were holding an anti-police brutality event, I watched him sucker punch a kid half his size. And how is that defending free speech? Right? To flatten some kid.
Right.
And lay him out on the sidewalk. How is that defending free speech? There's a lot of really credulous journalists, liberal commentators, and others who really don't understand what they're dealing with. And let me say that the organizers of this free speech rally have been traveling up and down the West Coast to New York. They were in New York for Milo's thing at CUNY, was it?
Yeah.
A week or two ago.
Right.
They've been riding vans and buses and flying to Berkeley, Seattle, New York, just to fight with college students.
Right.
Right. So how is that defending free speech? Are we really talking about a free speech movement here? Or are we talking about the beginnings of a paramilitary organization?
Well,
that's designed to shut down protests.
Yes, absolutely. And of course, like in the whole point, and Antifa is whatever one's opinion on it. I made no secret that I am a fan. is a defensive posture against fascism. And I don't understand, like, if people just need to go back and look at Captain America strips from the 40s or something. But, like, fascists are not good. And fascists are not to be civilly debated. And we can have any particular opinion on violence or nonviolence that we want. But these are not people that you sit down and have an open exchange of ideas with, because certain things are beyond the pale and certain things are disgusting and fundamentally wrong as premises. But that said, I mean, you stated it very explicitly. Is this the beginning of some type of attempt of paramilitary, you know, controlled access to platforms, terrorizing college students who, you know, again, and even that's a great example. It's a college protest about police brutality. It's not one of these, like, silly stories that still buzzes around the mainstream that, like, oh, you know, college students are so out of control because, you know, they were rude to some, you know, suit and tie racist like Charles Murray. Actually, most college campus activism is still pretty built around real stuff. Like, we in this college community don't want police departments that are out of control and murdering people of color. And we're going to organize some space for that. It's not like, you know, some trivial thing about, you know, a free speech, a speech code on campus or something. So that's something that's been wildly exaggerated as well. But you talk about the paramilitary thing. The head of the Portland Republican Party has said in a defensive posture, because of course they're not going to be defended by the police, that they might need to call up people from the Oath Keepers or the Three Percenter group, which are militia groups, to come and defend them and their kind of public actions in Portland. That was his response to this act of right-wing terrorism that we just witnessed. Of course, in the Trump era, there is, you know, Breitbart is a vehicle for white nationalism, racism, conspiracy theories that help fuel these movements. But then we go back to the 1990s, as I said before, and the Gingrich class, there was a lot of indulgence in black helicopter conspiracy theories and UN conspiracy theories. Jesse Helms, you know, senator from North Carolina, old arch segregationist, basically said Bill Clinton shouldn't visit North Carolina because he might get shot, you know, with kind of a twinkle in his eye. And then, of course, going back to the 60s, you had John Birch Society and their connections. And that's really what a guy like Alex Jones is doing. He's just doing kind of infomercial John Birch Society. They had close ties with the Republican Party. So this stuff has deep roots with, you know, conservatism, conspiracy theories, oligarchy, and bigotry are the fuels of right-wing politics. And now, you know, we're seeing it get kind of formalized and opened in a different way where, you know, even on the how long it took Trump to even just kind of issue a tepid condemnation of an act like this. And, you know, even just on the guy's kind of mullet alone, he should certainly qualify as a loser.
Let me pick up on what you mentioned about the it's actually the Multnomah County Republican Party, and that covers a large part of Portland.
Right.
This is an overwhelmingly liberal county. I get that Republicans here at times feel a little defensive, but the party leader is he's a crank. He told the Guardian that he's evolving toward the view of recruiting militia. But, you know, there's Facebook posts suggesting that he had already attempted to recruit these militias for the parade, which was canceled, which led to the free speech rally. He also said in a video that I found from February, you know, after Trump's inauguration, you know, he was addressing a pretty small meeting of the County Party Central Committee about Donald Trump. And here's what he said about Trump. His enemies are my enemies, and his enemies are all our enemies. Our enemies are more dangerous than ever. We are really in a life and death battle for the future of our society, and these globalist people are not going to give up. Right. We know what globalist is code for. If we don't tell fellow citizens that these are dark forces in government, like the CIA and shadow government, who are trying to take Trump down with lies, who is going to tell them? So is this, as he portrayed it to national media, sort of victimization? Oh, we've got a lot of elderly people in our party. We feel so threatened by these college kids who call us Nazis. But he's the one talking about you know, globalist infiltration, who's already flirting with militia groups who were at the National Wildlife Refuge occupation,
right,
with already flirting with Oath Keepers, Three Percenters, you know, current and former law enforcement and military people who have extreme right ideology, who see themselves, you can read it on their open Facebook pages, as already engaged in the civil war. So, you know, any of these poses where they portray themselves as the victims of you know, aggression from like 100-pound teenagers,
right,
who wear black hoodies is ludicrous.
Right.
Those kids aren't showing up to these rallies in guns, with guns, you know. Right. And I happen to know there are people on the right who are. And that's what I'm really worried about, because there's another rally this weekend on Sunday in Portland. So Kyle Chapman based stick man, you know, who is famous only for beating people. Baked Alaska, the anti-Semite with the big Twitter account who got fired from BuzzFeed, is another headliner. So Proud Boys and all these people are coming to town, and, you know, they're going to rally in the middle of town and they're going to pretend like it's a free speech, but it's a hate rally. Like, there's no mystery about what's happening.
What do you think it, you know, that, because it, there were people in, if you kind of go back into, we'll go from the, to the more sort of race side of it now, there was a contingent of people that kind of predated, you know, Richard Spencer in, and it was an odd time in the 80s and 90s, because on one hand, you know, a certain type of overt racism and kind of neo-eugenics was quite accepted in the mainstream. You had, you know, Andrew Sullivan, who I should never be forgiven for publishing The Bell Curve in The New Republic. And, you know, there was very mainstream conversations around, you know, pseudo-race science and very highly racialized rhetoric around welfare. But then on the other hand, the sort of, you know, the people who... you know, the predecessors to Richard Spencer were not in the mainstream. They were not getting, you know, booked on TV. They were considered very marginalized. And some of them, you know, a guy like Steve Saylor, I think his name is, V there, people like that, they kind of adopted a sort of pseudo-academic kind of pose. And again, obviously, Charles Murray and Herrnstein broke through into the mainstream with The Bell Curve. And they're sort of thing was, you know, we're measured, we're science based, and that was the kind of con for that. And now, you know, the new con, as we were talking about, is this free speech stuff. And, you know, what is the mechanism to reclaim some of that? It's like it either needs to be reclaimed, or we need to say, okay, this stuff is just a purely a nonsense Trojan horse for very serious things, and then for racism. And then at the same time, we have, you know, Fareed Zakaria using a CNN platform with all of this going on to, you know, tell kids at Bucknell that, you know, in like the biggest danger to them, not, you know, the debt they went into to go to Bucknell, is that they can't stand to listen to Ann Coulter. So what's the tactic? Because we at the simultaneously we need to realize what we're dealing with, and then we still need to overcome this mind-blowingly lazy and dangerous mainstream conversation about it.
This is a really important question. I'm not sure what to do except support independent media. I mean, part, right, of the problem is the people who are susceptible to this nonsense argument are not teenage black girls getting threatened by a nut with a knife on a train.
Right.
You know, they're getting limousined to their studio and back home.
Right.
You know, so that they can make comments. And they're in their experience, it's like, oh yeah, tiresome college kids and snowflakes and whatever, trigger warnings and class. They can only connect to the elite college seminar. That's their only point of reference for this stuff.
Right.
For the most part. So that's part of the problem, is, you know, a sort of class bias that has, you know, intensified in the mainstream media over the last 30 years, where people just, you know, the people with the loudest megaphones have the least
The least worries. Sort of,
yeah, the least right. worries.
And, least and, actual experience in anything.
Yeah, yeah. yeah. Right. And so I don't know if those people are persuadable. As far as the people who have their heads screwed on straight, I mean, you know, I think it is about calling out the hypocrisy of people who are, you know, arming up, intimidating others from showing up and expressing themselves, killing them in public because of who they are as standing up for free speech. It is such an idiocy. It is such absurdity that it doesn't even warrant engagement. I mean, because how can you counter that argument? The other thing with some of these groups, I mean, the real hard another thing that a lot of media comfortable media people do not have experience with is white supremacism. And I don't mean in the sense of institution, there is institutional racism in our society and we're all in some ways, you know, complicit in white supremacy. I am talking about gang members, right. you know, who have deeply researched Nazi ideology and who most importantly lie every day, certainly every time they talk to the media. I mean, some of the sort of neo-Confederate groups that are on their way to Portland, I've seen them quoted in other, you know, like local newspapers at their hate rallies around the country. And, you know, they'll get interviewed by the local reporter. And I know it's tough to be a local reporter. I've been that for many years myself. And it'll say, oh, you know, Joe Blow with a fake name from this small government group. I mean, it doesn't take a whole lot of research to put the lie to that. But journalism in this country is just not prepared. The conventions for it, the traditions of it, and also the libel laws. There are so many reasons why it's hard for even journalists who want to do the right thing to call these people out to do so. Because if they're willing to lie about who they are and what they represent, then it's pretty hard to describe them accurately in public. And they do lie.
What, as a final question, I mean, do you think that, you know, again, we have this sort of mainstream, disconnected, delusional conversation. We have this sort of, you know, the Paul Ryan, Mitch McConnell Republicans that maybe they would prefer if, you know, there wasn't race killings on the street. But, you know, it's fine to have a kind of at least indirectly, you know, bigoted agenda just so long as you can do the, you know, wish list of American plutocracy in terms of tax giveaways and destroying the social safety net. But there's obviously other parts of the modern Republican Party, from this county chair to Donald Trump himself, that might at least have, you know, indirect connections to these groups or direct. So, I mean, is that something that we're also going to be, you know, looking at, and will you be looking at in the future? Like, where are the formal ways, and are there formal ways where it's like we talk about brown shirts and paramilitaries or whatever? Is there interest in people inside the administration and at least surrounding it to utilize people like that?
I'm actually working on a story along those very lines right now with luck. It should be out this week. I'm talking to The Guardian about it. But the short answer is yes. I mean, I think that, you know, a lot more investigative resources need to be devoted to any ties between these sort of right wing brawler gangs. I'm talking about groups like Proud Boys, Kyle Chapman's outfit, Fraternal Order of Alt Knights, Three Percenters, these groups that are showing up to intimidate people out of anti-government protests, especially now that Trump's in office. He controls the law enforcement apparatus. He controls the surveillance apparatus. There needs to be a lot of eyes on any encouragement from the federal government toward these pseudo paramilitary groups. And, you know, that can be as much as not arresting people who are known violent, you know, repeat felons, you know, for committing acts of assault in public on camera in front of everyone. What does it say when somebody does that and there's no arrest? Right.
Right.
I think that's an area that I hope more journalists look at, and I've certainly been looking at as well.
And people should know, not that we're anywhere near this point yet, but even in many places where people have talked about regimes that have engaged in gangsterism and mass killings and mass suppression, Bosnia, Rwanda, some of the things, happening now in, a place like the Philippines, those things are outsourced by the government and the security services to gangs and paramilitaries affiliated with and favorable to regimes. So that dynamic is always there in any, attempt at authoritarianism and cleansing enemies. And yeah, it's not mass killing here, but the notion that you're engaging in, mass beatings and criminal activity with a nod from the White House is, again, it's another thing where obviously that never happened under Obama. It was the right-wing conspiracy theory, but that actually might be happening under this administration.
I mean, you've described the playbook, and, obviously there aren't – well, here's a hashtag to check on Twitter. RWDS stands for Right-Wing Death Squads. You'll see there's a lot of people agitating for this. And how can we have this discussion without talking about Giant Fort and the election in Montana?
Right. Right.
Exactly. What happened? Like, what's really going on here? I mean, there's I think it was in Lexington, Kentucky. The newspaper office got its windows shot out or something like that after a bomb threat.
Yep.
I mean, it's almost every day. So, this situation in Portland is particularly horrific, but this stuff is almost every day. Something is going on. And the public, here I am, not all Republicans, but a certain element of the GOP base that is diehard Trump is cheering these things,
right.
Cheering them. And there are people even, and it's horrible to think about, it's horrible to talk about, but there are people who cheered that murder in Portland. You can go on 4chan and look at their posts, and they say he's a hero. There's people in the comment section of the newspaper here who would say, it sure sounds like this guy was acting in self-defense because, these people put themselves in between his free speech, his discourse with these young black women. I mean,
wow.
Yeah, the depth of the degeneracy of some of public attitudes in this country is really the scariest part. Because if it was just like in the 90s, it was sort of easy to say, like, this is a fringe movement, these patriot militias, easily confined and under control of the FBI. We're in a different situation now. I mean, those movements have essentially got allies at the highest levels of government, and their views are much more mainstream than they were 20 years ago.
Corey Pine, journalist, Portland-based journalist, host of News From Nowhere podcast. Even when it's terrible, I really appreciate your time, man, and I'll be talking with
thanks.
You soon.
Get back to Sassy Trump now.
Yes, yes. I think I would like to just basically play Sassy Trump clips for the next hour. Okay. Thanks, Corey. Bye. All right, everybody. We're going to go to the fun half of the program. You can join us at 646-257-3920, 646-257-3920. The IMs are open. You know all the ways you can support the show as a member using our links, the Majority Report kickback page. Check out today's sponsor. Subscribe to Two Dope Boys in a Podcast. Subscribe to the Majority Report. Write iTunes reviews for everything. You can find me on Twitter at @_MichaelBrooks, @majority.fm. You know all that stuff. We'll see you in the fun half.